Turnbuckle frowned as he paced along the narrow street paved with flagstones. It had been a damned frustrating day, he thought. He had made appointments with the editors of the local newspapers, but hadn't been able to speak with any of them. Tomorrow would be different. At least he could look forward to a good meal. Being from San Francisco, he had eaten very little of the sort of cuisine favorite in Santa Fe. He had discovered that he had a great liking for food seasoned with the hot peppers that were so popular, especially when he had a mug of beer to temper the spices in his mouth and throat. Since his thoughts were occupied not only with the impending meal, but also the legal problems he was struggling with on behalf of Conrad, he almost didn't notice the man who had stepped out of the shadows at the mouth of an alley.
Señor, señor, please help. My child, she is very sick.
Instantly, Turnbuckle was suspicious, but the man was already too close to him. An arm shot out, and Turnbuckle felt the hot bite of cold steel into his body. Turnbuckle stumbled forward, but managed to stay on his feet. The knife flickered back. Turnbuckle lunged at the man. Turnbuckle's right hand closed around the throat of the would-be assassin, while his left caught the wrist of the man's knife hand. Hot, wet agony flowed from the wound in his belly. He knew he was losing a lot of blood and would soon pass out because of it. But his instincts as a fighter wouldn't let him surrender. He shoved his attacker deeper into the shadows of the alley and rammed him against the adobe wall of one of the buildings. The man struggled desperately against the grip Turnbuckle had on his throat, but he couldn't get free. Turnbuckle pulled him away from the wall, then slammed him against it. The man went limp in his hands. The lawyer let go and staggered back. The assailant collapsed on the dirty ground of the alley and didn't move. Turnbuckle wheeled around and looked at the rectangle of faint light that marked the alley mouth. He stumbled toward it, pressing his hands to his wounded midsection.
Blanton?
He had no doubt the governor's aide was behind the attack. Blanton wanted him out of the way so he couldn't continue to get the charges against Conrad Browning dropped. That made Turnbuckle more convinced than ever there was something shady behind the $10,000 bounty. But he had to live in order to prove it. His legs moved, putting one foot in front of the other. He had to remain conscious until he could get some help. If he passed out in the alley, he would bleed to death. He was only a few feet short of his goal when the world suddenly turned a black deeper than the shadows in the alley. Turnbuckle pitched forward and lay silent and motionless as his life's blood continued running out onto the dirt.
I'll take my guns back now, McCall.
I guess I might as well go along with that. We've sort of gotten past the point of considering you my prisoner, haven't we?
I'd say we're partners. For now.
This is the first time something like this has happened. I don't know what's wrong with me.
Seems to me like you're just being reasonable.
The kid took the Colt she handed to him. He set his Winchester and Sharps onto a table just outside the cabin.
First time I seen one of those big 50s in a while. Used to know a fella who hunted buffalo with a carbine like that. It's a hell of a gun if you need to make a long-range shot. Packs a mighty big wallop close up, too. Almost like being shot with a cannon.
What are we gonna do about those bodies out there? I can't help but wonder if any of them have rewards out for them.
Spoken like a true bounty hunter.
It's a job like any other. Any other that pays in blood money.
You two best save your squabbling for later. Guthrie will be back here before the day's over, more than likely. And we gotta figure out what we're gonna do about it. He can take them dead hombres with him when he goes if he wants to.
I was looking at the cliff earlier. There's a ledge up there about 100 feet above the cabin. Is there any way to get to it?
Yeah, if you're a darn mountain goat.
What are you thinking, kid?
And a man on that ledge could keep anybody from getting close to the cabin if he had a rifle and plenty of ammunition. Be like a target shoot from up there.
Yeah, that's true. Are you volunteering?
I could take the first shift anyway. You and I could take turns guarding the place. That won't solve Mr. Blount's problem in the long run, though.
Nothing's gonna solve that, except putting a bullet through Spud Guthrie's head. I don't much cotton to cold-blooded murder, though.
If he's attacking you, it wouldn't be murder. This is your land. It would be self-defense.
Yeah. Problem is, all them hard cases working for him would try to grab the reins for themselves as soon as Guthrie was dead.
The kid didn't have a solution for that. For the time being, however, he and McCall could protect the old-timer and try to figure out something else as they went along. He picked up his Winchester.
Show me the trail to that ledge.
Calling it a trail, being mighty generous. But I'll show you where to climb.
The kid stuffed a box full of .44-40 cartridges into his coat pocket and followed the old man. McCall came along, too.
I'll keep an eye out for trouble.
The kid and Blunt went around the cabin and walked over to the cliff face. Blunt started pointing out the footholds and handholds the kid would need to use to reach the ledge, which had a slab of rock perched on it that he could use for cover.
I'll head on up.
The climb took almost a quarter of an hour. When the kid finally had reached the ledge, he rolled onto it and waved a hand to let Blunt know he was there safely. He unslung the Winchester and scooted into position behind the rock. He could see the entire open area in front of the cabin, as well as the band of trees on the other side of it. In fact, the view was spectacular, stretching for several miles of green, pine-covered landscape. Sitting up there and looking out over the vast swath of Arizona territory would have been pretty peaceful, he thought, if he hadn't been waiting for a small army of gunmen to show up and try to kill him, McCall, and Blunt. The kid wondered if McCall was starting to believe that he was innocent of the charges leveled against him. She had agreed to give back his guns with much less argument than he had expected. Of course, the fact that he was already armed might have had something to do with that. It was easier for them to cooperate than try to kill each other. Having her as an actual ally would make it easier for him to get to Santa Fe and set the record straight. From all indications, they had given Pike and the other bounty hunters the slip. But the kid had believed that before and turned out to be wrong. He didn't let his mind wander too much. His attention stayed focused on the approaches to the cabin. About an hour had passed since his climb to the ledge when he spotted riders approaching from the east. It was a large group, approximately 20 men, but according to Blunt, that was only about half of Guthrie's force. The rancher probably thought that was more than enough to overwhelm any defense Blunt might put up. The kid had no doubt that Spud Guthrie believed his word was law in those parts. The kid had run into that sort of arrogant cattle baron before, and he had heard about others from his father. Men who believed they could run roughshod over anyone who opposed them, even to the point of murder, simply because they had more land and cattle than anybody else in the area. Sometimes they had to be shown the error of their ways at the point of a gun. The kid's eyes followed the riders as they circled to the far side of the trees. They disappeared from his sight there, but he was confident that they would show up again. 20 minutes later, three of the men rode out of the trees and reined in where they could see the cabin. One of the riders edged his horse slightly in front of the other two. Even from far away, the kid could tell that he was on the small side. That was probably what had gotten him the nickname Spud.
Blount! Blount, can you hear me?
I hear you, Guthrie.
Blunt was hiding behind the single window in the front of the cabin.
You killed some of my men.
Only because they tried to kill me first.
I'm going to give you one more chance. Get on that mule of yours and ride away. You can have safe passage out of here. Just don't ever come back.
You can go to hell. Those caballos is mine and always will be.
I've got 20 men out here, you old fool. If we charge that cabin, I don't care who you've got helping you. We'll overrun you and kill you.
Not without a whole heap of you buzzards dying first. And I reckon I'll be aiming at you first thing, Spud.
The kid saw that Guthrie wore a tall crown hat on his head. He lined the Winchester sights on it.
All right, Blount. You call the tune. Now you can damn well dance to it.
He lifted an arm to signal for his men to attack. Even though the kid couldn't see them, he knew they were probably spread out through the trees in a skirmish line. Blunt and McCall couldn't hope to pick off more than a few of them as they charged. But the kid could see the whole field, and he thought it was time to send a signal of his own. He squeezed the Winchester's trigger. Spud Guthrie's hat leaped from his head. Guthrie leaped in the saddle and clapped a hand to his suddenly uncovered cranium. As he came back down on leather, he grabbed the reins and whirled his horse around to dash back into the timber. At the same time, the two men who had ridden out with him whipped their rifles to their shoulders and started blazing away at the ledge where the shot had come from. The kid ducked low behind the rock. From their angle, the two gunmen couldn't get a clear view of him, nor could they ricochet their slugs off the cliff face behind him. He waited until their weapons fell silent, then thrust his Winchester over the top of the rock again, aiming just short so the bullets kicked up dust under the hooves of the horses. The men had to fight to get their horses under control. The kid probably could have picked them both off, but instead he held his fire and allowed Guthrie's men to retreat into the woods. The message he had sent them was clear. With a field of fire commanding the entire area in front of the cabin, he could kill the men at will if they charged. Combined with the damage that McCall and Blunt would do by firing from inside the cabin, it was possible they might be able to wipe out the whole party. Guthrie was smart enough to know that, too. He came back to the edge of the trees.
Blount! Blount!
Speak your peace!
Tell your man to hold his fire.
He already is, ain't he? Hurry it up before we get impatient.
I want the bodies of my men.
All right, you can take them. There ain't nothing left of the one who was standing right over that dynamite when it blew, though.
We'll come out and get the others. Hold your fire.
Several men emerged from the pines and cast nervous glances toward the ledge where the kid had them covered. They hurried forward, picked up the bodies of the two men who had been killed in the explosion and the two who had died in the fighting afterward. They carried the corpses back into the cover of the trees.
I'm leaving, but I'll be back. You can't win, Blount. You can't hold out against all of us.
Maybe not. But a bunch of you will die before you root me out.
Guthrie didn't respond to that. The kid kept watching, and a few minutes later, the group of riders reappeared, moving away from the area. Some of the men had doubled up, so their horses could be used to carry the bodies.
They're gone!
McCall and Blunt emerged and waved up at him to show they had heard.
You need me to spell you?
Not yet, I'm fine.
He settled back to keep watch. His eyes scanned the landscape. The rest of the afternoon passed quietly. Since the sun was setting, the kid was now inside the cabin with McCall and Blunt.
We all need to get out of here.
What are you talking about, kid?
Guthrie and his men are liable to come back as soon as it's good and dark. If we let them catch us here in the cabin, we won't be able to hold out against them.
Dadgummit, this has been my home for 10 years. I can't just abandon it.
You can take anything of value with you, but it's a bad idea to stay.
Where do you think we should go, kid?
I was thinking we could hole up in the canyon. The entrance is pretty narrow. They can't come at us all at once if we're in there.
That's not a bad idea.
It's a terrible idea. Guthrie's such a snake, he's liable to burn the cabin down.
Let him. I know you don't like the idea, Mr. Blount, but Dos Caballos will be a lot easier to defend.
Damn it. I reckon you're right, but I don't have to like it.
We've got 3 horses and a mule. We'll gather up as many of your belongings as we can and take them with us.
Blount didn't say much and obviously was still upset, but he didn't argue anymore. Within half an hour, they had the old-timer's gear loaded and were ready to make the move. A red glow remained in the western sky. The kid knew they didn't have much time. He led the buckskin and the extra horse McCall had brought from Las Vegas. McCall followed, leading the black, and Blount brought up the rear with the mule. Max bounded ahead of his human companions, on the alert for any sign of danger. When they reached the mouth of the canyon, Blount unlatched the brush-covered gate.
How did you build such a thing with only one arm?
Lots of time, sweat, and determination. Give me a hand here, kid. I can open and close this gate by myself, but it's a heap easier with 2 people.
They swung the gate back and took the animals into the canyon, then pulled the gate shut behind them. It wouldn't keep out anybody who really wanted in, but it would slow down an attack. Somebody would have to open the gate, and after a few of Guthrie's men got picked off trying to do that, it might discourage them into giving up. The kid didn't believe it, though. Guthrie's pride had been wounded too badly to turn back now. They moved deeper into the canyon.
Is there any way to climb down these walls?
Nope. Maybe in daylight, if a fella was half fly, but sure as sin, nobody could do it in the dark.
What about the other end of the canyon?
Ain't no way out there, or in, neither. We're boxed up good and proper here.
Maybe this wasn't such a good idea, kid. Guthrie can just lay siege to the place and starve us out.
He can try. We'll have to hope fate deals us a trump card.
The kid already had the glimmering of a plan drifting around in the back of his mind. Blount led his men to a trickle of a creek where they built a campfire. A big rock jutted out from the canyon wall to shield the fire from the canyon mouth. The old man boiled coffee and they ate the flapjacks they had brought with them. It was a meager supper, but they might have to make their provisions last for quite a while. From the other side of the rock next to the fire, they could see the entrance to the canyon and agreed to take turns standing guard. Blount suggested that he take the first watch and McCall the second, since the kid had spent most of the afternoon hunkered on the ledge.
That way you can go ahead and get some rest.
The kid agreed. He was tired, and it would feel good to stretch out on his bedroll. Even though he hadn't been born and bred a frontiersman, far from it, in fact, he had developed many abilities over the past years, including the ability to fall asleep almost instantly when he had the chance. He dropped into a deep, dreamless slumber that didn't end until McCall touched him on the shoulder long after midnight. The kid came awake just as quickly as he fell asleep. He was fully alert as he sat up.
Any trouble?
Not a bit. Guthrie hasn't tried anything.
The kid buckled on his gun belt and picked up his rifle.
I'll take over now.
I'll come with you for a minute.
They walked around the rock, and Max followed them.
I sat on that log there. It's not real comfortable, but when you lean back against the rock, it's better than the ground.
When you're standing guard, you don't need to be too comfortable.
That's what I thought.
They settled themselves on the log. Max lay down at their feet, resting his head on his paws. The kids sensed that McCall had something on her mind. He didn't press her. If she had something to say, she could get around to it in her own way and in her own sweet time.
What did you say your real name is, kid?
Conrad Browning. You believe that now?
Well, I don't know. But after being around you for a while, I can tell that you're not like any of the other fugitives I've ever gone after. It's not just that you're an educated man. Some of them were, too, but there's a gentleness about you that I never saw in any of them.
I'm not a gentleman.
That's not what I said. I said you had a gentleness. I don't think you want people to see it, but it's there. If it wasn't, you wouldn't have gone to the trouble of sending that picture and the money to my mother in Kansas City.
It wasn't mine.
No, but most men wouldn't have done it. Anyway, you've told me your real name, so I reckon I ought to tell you mine.
It's not McCall?
That part of it is. But my first name is Lace.
Lace? Sort of a soft name for a hard-as-nails bounty hunter.
I wasn't always a bounty hunter. My mama, she worked in a house in St. Louis. You know?
I know. You don't have to tell me any of this if you don't want to.
If I didn't want to, I wouldn't be telling you. I was born there. She wanted a better life for me than she had, so she moved to Kansas City and tried to find a real job there. It was hard for her, though, and after a while, well, she went back to it. With all that, I don't guess anybody would be real surprised to hear out I turned out the same way. I wound up in a family way. One of my customers, a man named McCall, offered to marry me. I took him up on it. I wanted my child to have a name. He turned out to be a pretty bad sort, though. He didn't treat me good. After a while, I found out he was even worse than I thought when I happened to see a wanted poster with his picture on it. The man on the poster had a different name, but McCall was one of the names he was said to use sometimes. I went home, and the next time he raised his hand to me, I was ready. I shot the son of a bitch.
You killed him?
No, I just put a bullet in his knee, and while he was rolling around on the floor screaming, I went and found a policeman and told him there was a wanted fugitive in my house. They hauled him off, and I claimed the reward. I got it, too. That was enough for me to be able to set my mama and my little girl up so they'd be all right. That was how I found out I liked bounty hunting a lot better than I liked being a whore.
And that's what you've been doing for the past few years?
5 years. I already knew how to fight. I taught myself how to ride and shoot and found that I really took to it. Then I met Pronto, and he made me even better at it.
Pike?
Yeah. We got along just fine at first before I realized how loco he really is. That seems to be a failing of mine, kid. I can't see what a man's really like until I've been with him for a while. I'm hoping it'll be different with you.
You're not with me.
She cuffed the hat off her head and leaned toward him.
The hell I'm not.
A second later, her arms were around his neck and her mouth was pressed hotly to his. The kid's first instinct was to pull away from her, but something kept him from doing it, and after a moment, as an old, familiar arousal surged up inside him, he realized he was feeling things that he hadn't experienced in months, an unexpectedly urgent need to slide his arms around Lace and pull her to him so their bodies came together with an intensity that set the blood pounding in his head. It wasn't right, a part of his brain insisted. It wasn't right at all. But he couldn't deny what he felt, couldn't ignore the need. It had been too long. Lace might be as hard as nails most of the time, but she softened in his embrace. He didn't get the chance to find out what was going to happen next.
What?
Lace sprang away from him and jumped to her feet, her hand going to the gun on her hip. The kid was up too, with his Colt in his hand. His eyes searched the canyon mouth, but evidently the explosion hadn't come from there. Chester Blunt came running around the rock.
My cabin! The bastards blew up my cabin!
A garish orange glow in the sky to the west of the canyon marked the location of a fire where Blunt's cabin was, or had been. Spud Guthrie's men had come back to finish what they had started earlier in the day. The kid wondered how long it would take Guthrie to discover that nobody was in the cabin. The rancher probably wouldn't explore the ruins until morning. When he realized there were no bodies in the charred debris, he might figure that Blunt and his allies had abandoned the cabin and the canyon. Guthrie wouldn't find out different until he and his men tried to waltz into Dos Caballos and got a hot lead welcome. Then they would lay siege to the canyon, and it would be only a matter of time before the three defenders were starved out. There had to be a better way. and the kid thought he had an idea what it might be.
Take it easy, Mr. Blount. The cabin can be rebuilt. One way or another, I'll see to it that it is.
You can believe him. He's a rich man, after all.
No offense, kid, but that's mighty hard to believe.
None taken. You'll see. Once we get out of here and Guthrie is dealt with.
Who's gonna deal with him?
I am.
Just what are you up to, Morgan?
Mr. Blount, can you tell me how to get to the Rafter G?
Well, yeah, I reckon. You ought to be able to find a trail even in the dark. Just what is it you got in mind doing?
Thought I'd pay a call on Spud Guthrie.
Wait just a damn minute. It sounds to me like you're talking about running out on us, kid.
Not at all. I'm going to grab Guthrie and bring him back here. Him's a hostage. His men won't dare attack the canyon. And they sure won't dynamite the walls and cave them in.
How's that going to solve things in the long run? Can't they still wait us out?
As soon as I get back with Guthrie, you're going to take our extra horse and ride to Phoenix as fast as you can. McCall and I will hold Guthrie in the canyon until you get back with the law.
You really think the law's gonna side with an old prospector like me over a rich rancher like Guthrie?
When you get to Phoenix, send a wire to a lawyer named John Stafford in San Francisco. Use my name, and have him wire the governor of Arizona Territory and request his assistance in the matter. If necessary, Stafford can contact the Justice Department in Washington, and have a deputy United States Marshal sent in. We'll stay here and protect the canyon until you get back with the authorities, and they can deal with Guthrie.
You sound mighty confident that these friends in high places will be glad to help out.
I think they will. The Browning financial holdings and business interests wield considerable influence.
If that's true, how come there's a 10 grand bounty on your head?
That's something I can't answer. Someone who's pretty powerful must be pulling the strings behind the scenes in Santa Fe. But I don't know who or why.
You know, the more I listen to you talk, the more I start to believe that you're actually telling the truth about who you are.
Good. Because it's true.
All right. Your plan's a long shot, but it's the only one we have other than sitting here and letting Guthrie starve us out. You're going to Guthrie's ranch to grab him?
That's right.
I'm coming with you.
That's not a good idea. Somebody needs to stay here with Mr. Blount.
Hey, I can take care of myself.
I'm sure you can. But two people can defend this canyon better than one if something happens to me and it comes down to that. And one person will be able to slip in and out of the Rafter G easier than two.
This would be a perfect chance for you to ride off and never come back.
I'm not going to do that. You can believe me or not.
Damn it, I do believe you. Whether I want to or not. All right, kid. Conrad. Whatever the hell your name is. When are you going?
No point in waiting. As soon as Mr. Blount tells me how to get to the Rafter G, I'll be on my way.
It was possible Guthrie had left guards watching what was left of the cabin, although judging from the size of the blast, nothing could have lived through it. The kid would have to take that chance. He led the buckskin to the gate. Lace came with him. They opened it together. The kid took the horse through the narrow gap, and he turned back to Lace.
Keep your eyes and ears open. When I get here with Guthrie, I'll give a hoot owl call. I may need some help with the gate.
I'll be waiting. Kid, be careful. You're our best shot at getting out of this alive.
Don't worry. I'm not going to die until I've cleared up those charges against me.
Lace leaned toward him, put her arms around his neck, and kissed him. The kid didn't try to stop her. In fact, he returned the kiss with an eagerness he hadn't felt in a long time. With that, he gave her shoulder a squeeze and turned away. He heard her shove the gate closed behind him as he led the buckskin eastward, along the face of the towering cliffs that formed the Mogollon Rim. He moved as carefully and quietly as possible, and no one tried to stop him. Either Guthrie hadn't bothered putting any guards on the destroyed cabin, or else he had slipped past them unnoticed. Blount had said there was a trail leading to the top of the rim about half a mile east of Dos Caballos Canyon. It was a narrow path, barely wide enough for one man on horseback. Too narrow for cattle, even moving single file, which was why Guthrie wanted to blast the canyon into a wider trail. The next path to the top was a good 5 miles farther east, and it wasn't fit for cattle either. The wagon that had brought the dynamite to Blount's cabin earlier in the day must have gone a long way around, the kid mused. He supposed they hadn't wanted to risk carrying the explosives down the narrow trail. Guthrie was probably mad enough that he hadn't worried about that tonight. The kid watched for the landmark Blount had mentioned, a boulder flanked by a couple of pine trees. The trail started its climb right behind that boulder. The kid had only starlight to navigate by. A moon would have helped, but it also would have made it easier for him to be spotted by his enemies. In that part of the country, other than Lace McCall and Chester Blount, all he had were enemies. The kid found the trail without much trouble. He mounted up and started on the twisting path to the rim. The sure-footed buckskin moved carefully. One misstep could have sent both man and horse plunging hundreds of feet into the darkness. To his relief, they came out on the top of the rim. The headquarters of the Rafter G was a couple of miles due north from there, Blunt had said. The kids steered by the stars and headed in that direction. A chilly wind swept down from the Colorado Plateau and blew in the kids' face. It would help keep the horses in the Rafter G's corrals from scenting the buckskin and raising a ruckus. The men who had blown up Blunt's cabin had had plenty of time to get back to the ranch and report the success of their mission to Guthrie. The kid expected that everybody had turned in, secure in the mistaken belief their enemies had been blown to kingdom come. As he approached the ranch headquarters, he spotted a yellow glow, lamp light through a window. Somebody was still up and awake. Stealthy as an Apache, the kid dismounted and stole closer to the big ranch house on foot, leaving the buckskin tied in some trees. It was too dark to make out all the details, but the Rafter G's headquarters appeared to be a sprawling two-story log structure with a bunkhouse and several smaller outbuildings off to one side, near a big barn and some corrals. The light he saw was on the first floor of the ranch house. An office, maybe? Guthrie might be burning the midnight oil, trying to come up with some more deviltry now that he thought he'd gotten rid of Chester Blunt. More than likely, he was figuring out his plans to turn Dos Caballos Canyon into a cattle trail. Men had an infinite capacity for convincing themselves they weren't evil, the kid mused. In Guthrie's mind, his actions were justified. If Blunt had accepted the offer to buy the canyon, then Guthrie wouldn't have been forced to blow him sky high. Or maybe he knew he was a ruthless son of a bitch and just didn't care. It didn't really matter. Either way, he had to be stopped. And it had fallen to the kid to stop him. He crouched beneath the lighted window and raised himself until he could peer through the glass, which was lowered against the night chill. His guess that the room inside the window was an office proved to be correct. Guthrie sat at a massive roll-top desk, pawing through papers. Maps and engineers' reports, the kid thought. From the window, the kid had a good view of his profile. The rancher was short and wiry, with a high forehead, thinning brown hair, and a soup strainer mustache that hung over his mouth. He didn't look all that impressive at first glance, but there was a vitality about him, a force and drive that went a long way toward explaining how he had been able to carve a ranch out of the wilderness and seize as much power as he could hold. He might have been an admirable man, the kid thought, if his pride and arrogance hadn't gotten out of control. Slipping along the wall in the shadows, the kid came to a porch and climbed onto it, being careful not to make the boards creak. His hands found the front door. West of the Mississippi, few people locked their doors, except those who lived in the big cities, and Spud Guthrie was no exception. The knob turned under the kid's fingers, and the door swung open. He held his breath, hoping the noise hadn't been loud enough to penetrate into the office where Guthrie was working. When he didn't hear any response, he stepped inside and eased the door closed behind him. The office was to his right, down a hallway. The door was open a crack, just enough to let a narrow band of light slant through it. The kid started toward it.
Do not move, or I will kill you.
The voice belonged to a man. Then he realized that it sounded Chinese. He guessed that Guthrie had a Chinese cook who also took care of the house. The man must have heard the noise the door made when it opened. The kid didn't want to hurt the man, but he couldn't afford to let anyone stop him from accomplishing his mission. The lives of Lace and Blunt might well depend on it. He started to raise his hands.
Take it easy, friend.
Then whirled around. The son of a gun had tried to cut his head off with a meat cleaver. Swiftly, the kid struck out with his left fist, aiming at the man's head. The man collapsed onto the floor. As the kid turned back toward the corridor where the office was located, the door swung open, letting more light splash out. Guthrie's short, slender figure was silhouetted against the glow.
Wayne? Is that you?
The name confirmed the kid's hunch about the Chinese cook, but he didn't waste time congratulating himself. He rushed across the space separating him from Guthrie.
Oh, crap!
The rancher saw him coming and clawed at a gun holstered on his hip. The kid slammed a haymaker into the middle of Guthrie's face and put the man down and out. Guthrie didn't look very threatening, crumpled on the floor in front of the desk, but the kid knew that some of the most venomous snakes in the world were small, too. After standing for a few seconds with his heart slugging heavily in his chest, he bent and got hold of Guthrie, hoisting the rancher over his left shoulder. At least Guthrie didn't weigh very much. As the kid turned toward the door, a stocky figure appeared in the doorway. The Chinese cook had regained consciousness and stood poised to throw the cleaver like a Barbary Coast hatchet man. He hesitated at the sight of Guthrie draped over the kid's shoulder. The kid's gun flickered out of its holster.
Drop it.
You would not dare shoot. The sound would bring 20 men running from the bunkhouse.
That's true. But you wouldn't be alive to see them get here now, would you? What could they do as long as I've got a hold of their boss?
The cleaver hit the floor as the man dropped it.
Good. Turn around.
Do not kill me. I ask
you. Turn around.
Nervously, the man turned. The kid stepped up close behind him. He flipped the gun around in his hand and struck, rapping the cook sharply on the head just above the black braid. The cook folded up, out cold. The kid knew he wouldn't regain consciousness for several minutes. Balancing Guthrie on his shoulder, he went to the front door of the ranch house and slipped out into the night. He could have killed Guthrie, but he wasn't a cold-blooded murderer. And anyway, there was no guarantee that would solve the problem. One or more of the hired guns working for the rancher might decide it was time for them to take over the Rafter G. It was going to be a true cleanup, and for that, the kid needed the law. Even if it meant being recognized by the badge toters and risking his own freedom. The kid headed for the trees where he had left the buckskin. Before he got there, a man stepped out of the bunkhouse.
Hey, who's there?
Ignoring the challenge, the kid kept going. He figured the good luck couldn't last, and he was right.
Now hold it, damn it, I'll shoot!
The kid didn't stop or even slow down.
Everybody out! Something's wrong!
The kid reached the trees as Guthrie's men piled out of the bunkhouse. It was too dark for accurate shooting, and the kid heard slugs whip through the pine needles, but none of them came close to him and Guthrie. He reached his horse and slung Guthrie's senseless form over its back. He jerked the reins loose and swung up into the saddle.
Stop shooting! Stop shooting! Yes, Mr. Guthrie! Stop!
The kid turned the buckskin and moved as fast as he could through the trees. Within minutes, Guthrie's men would be mounted up and coming after it. The kid's brain worked swiftly as he tried to figure out what to do next. If he headed for the rim, taking the narrow back-and-forth trail down the cliff face, it would give the pursuers a good chance to catch up to him. The gunman believed that Chester Blunt and his mysterious allies had died in the explosion that destroyed the old-timer's cabin. The timing of Guthrie's kidnapping was suspicious, of course, but they wouldn't naturally assume that whoever had grabbed their boss was heading for Dos Caballos Canyon. When the kid came out of the trees into an open stretch, he heeled the buckskin east, roughly parallel to the edge of the Mogollon Rim, a couple of miles to the south. With him fleeing in that direction, Guthrie's men likely wouldn't think that he had any connection to Blunt and the canyon that Guthrie craved. The kid wanted to keep it that way. All he had to do was outride a couple dozen hard-cased killers who wanted to see him dead. As if that wasn't going to be enough of a chore, Spud Guthrie chose that moment to wake up and twist around. The kid hammered a punch into Guthrie's face. Guthrie sagged backward. The kid slowed his buckskin to a walk, then looped his left arm around the rancher's throat and drew his gun. He pressed the barrel into Guthrie's back.
Settle down, you little snake. I'm damn close to blowing your spine into and being done with it.
Who the hell are you? What do you want with me?
Right now, I want you to stop fighting so I don't have to kill you. As for who I am, let's just say I'm a friend of Chester Blount's. How's your hat, Spud?
You son of a... You were the maverick up on that ledge this afternoon.
That's right. I could have killed you then. I drilled your hat on purpose. Don't make me regret deciding to let you live.
But that cabin...
We weren't in it. Blount's fine.
The kid had kept the buckskin moving, guiding the horse with his knees since both his hands were occupied. But he knew he couldn't keep on that way. Guthrie's men weren't far behind him, and they would be riding hard.
Take off your belt and put your hands behind your back.
Go to hell.
I'll kill you if I have to. If I keep you propped up in front of me, your men won't know you're dead. They'll have to hold their fire for fear of hitting you. So you can be a live hostage or a dead one, Guthrie. It's up to you.
Guthrie realized the kid meant it. He fumbled with his belt and pulled it off. The kid holstered his gun, but kept his tight grip around Guthrie's neck. He looped the belt around Guthrie's wrists and jerked it tight, binding the rancher's arms behind his back. With that done, the kid was able to take hold of the reins and urge the buckskin into a gallop again. They made better time, but when he looked back, he spotted a dark mass in the distance, the riders from the Rafter G giving chase. Coming to an area of more rugged terrain cut by rocky ridges and gullies, the kid was forced to slow down and ride back and forth to avoid some of the obstacles. He worked the buckskin into a brush-choked ravine. The shadows were so thick, no starlight penetrated. Taking a bandana from his saddlebags, he wadded it up and forced it into Guthrie's mouth.
Take it easy. I can cut your throat without making a sound.
They waited in silence for about 15 minutes. The kid knew these had to be the hired killers from the Rafter G.
Damn it, Neville. We don't know that he came this way.
He was headed this direction when he left the flats.
Well, he grabbed the boss in the first place. Ransom, maybe?
Yeah, it could be. Suppose the richest hombre in these parts.
Hell, his hole is damn near as big as he is.
I think we ought to check out that canyon.
Those caballos? Well, that old codger and his friend. They didn't have anything to do with this.
The kid waited another half hour. Then, satisfied that his decoying tactics had worked, he emerged from the ravine and sent the buckskin back toward the Rafter G. When he came to the trail that led down off the rim, he dismounted and hauled Guthrie down from the horse's back.
You're going in front. Try anything funny, you'll be the one who makes it to the bottom of the rim in a hurry.
With the kid leading the buckskin and prodding Guthrie along, the three of them started the descent. It was bad enough having to follow the trail in darkness, but with his hands tied behind him, Guthrie had it even worse. He had to move very slowly to keep his balance and find each spot to place his feet. It seemed to take forever to reach the bottom. The eastern sky was gray with the approach of dawn by the time they reached the entrance to Dos Caballos Canyon. The kid gave the signal, and a moment later, McCall and Blunt appeared at the gate.
Kid, is that you?
Yeah, I've got Guthrie.
Good Lord, I didn't really believe you could do it.
The kid took hold of the heavy gate and helped Lace open it. Then he led the buckskin through with the prisoner on its back. Blunt glared up at Guthrie in the gray gloom.
Bet you thought I was blowed to smithereens, didn't you, you snaky little varmint? Well, I ain't, and pretty soon you're gonna be answering for all the no good things you done. Some of them fellas who disappeared just before you gobbled up the range was friends of mine. I'll bet once the law starts poking around, they'll find that them scallywhooters who work for you are mighty good with a running iron, too.
Let's get him back to the camp. I want to get him tied up good and proper so he can't get away.
But I got that other horse of yours right here. The names I need to remember when I get to Phoenix are John Stafford in San Francisco and Conrad Browning, right?
That's right.
The kid shook hands with the old man.
Good luck.
You two are the ones who are going to need it. You'll be stuck here in this canyon with a viper in your midst and a whole heap of killers right outside just waiting for a chance to ventilate you.
We won't give them that chance. You better get started. It'll be a while before they decide to come look here, but there's no point in waiting.
Blunt mounted up and rode out of the canyon. When Blunt was gone and the gate was securely fastened again, the kid and Lace escorted Guthrie to the camp on the other side of the big rock. While the kid covered him, Lace used several pieces of rope to hogtie Guthrie. They set him down with his back against the rock, confident that he couldn't get loose.
You've had some practice at tying up prisoners.
Yeah, once I've got my hands on a man, he doesn't get away. Unless I want him to.
The kid didn't ask what she meant by that. He had a hunch he might find out. It was the middle of the morning before the kid heard horses approaching the canyon.
Rider's coming.
She hurried around the rock to where he was standing watch, leaving Guthrie trussed up on the other side and the dog to keep an eye on him.
I told Max if Guthrie opens his mouth to yell, he can chew on him a little.
Carrying their Winchesters, they walked up to the gate to look out. A group of about a dozen men came into sight, riding toward the canyon from the east. The kid knew they had probably come down the treacherous trail he and Guthrie had descended the night before. He didn't actually recognize any of them, but the hard stamp of their faces told him they were some of Guthrie's hired killers.
That whole gun crew's probably split up to search in all directions for Guthrie. You think they'll ride on past?
They might. But in case they don't, we'd better get behind some cover.
He nodded toward a couple of thick-trunked pine trees that would give them a good view of the gate. In a crouching run, he and Lace moved over and got situated behind them. The riders stopped just outside its entrance, as the kid thought they would.
A couple of you get down and open that damn gate the old man built.
What would the boss be doing in there, Neville?
Damned if I know, but we're gonna look every place we can find.
From the kid's position, he could see the latch that held the gate closed. He He drew a bead on it with his rifle and waited. A moment later, through a gap in the brush, he saw a hand reach for the latch. He drilled a .44-40 slug right through the hand. The man jerked it back. A second later, shots roared as the men outside the gate acted instinctively, pulling iron and blazing away through the brush. The kid had already ducked back behind the tree, and Lace was safely behind the trunk of the other pine.
Hold your fire! Hold your fire! We don't know who's in there.
Must be that old codger.
But we blew him up.
We blew up his cabin. We don't know for sure if he was inside it. Besides, he had some help yesterday, and we don't know who or how many. We gotta get that gate open.
And get shot like Benson? He may not ever be able to use that hand again.
Rope it. Pull the damn thing down.
That would probably work, the kid thought. And if it did, the gunman could charge through and overwhelm him and Lace before they could stop all of them. They couldn't run that risk.
Nibble! Can you hear me?
Who the hell is that?
It doesn't matter who I am. The important thing is that I've got your boss in here. If you try to come through that gate, he's a dead man.
You've got Guthrie?
That's right.
How do we know you're telling the truth?
Somebody took him right out of his own ranch house last night, didn't they? And knocked out the cook while they were there. How would I know that if it wasn't me who grabbed him?
What do you want?
Turn around and ride away. Leave this canyon alone. If you bust in or try anything else, Guthrie will be dead long before you can get your hands on him.
You'll die too, you son of a bitch. You and whoever else is in there with you.
Maybe. So will a lot of your men.
That's a dead-end canyon. You can't get out. You've trapped yourself in there, you fool. We can sit out here until you starve.
Guthrie will starve first. You don't think we'll be sharing our rations with him, do you?
I don't know for sure if he's even alive. I want some proof you've got him, damn it.
The kid had been expecting that. He looked over at Lace and nodded. She dashed back around the rock to the campsite, and when she reappeared, she was prodding Guthrie ahead of her at the point of her Winchester. His feet were untied so he could walk, but his hands were still lashed tightly behind his back. He didn't have a gag in his mouth. Lace poked him in the back with the rifle.
Nibble!
Is that you, boss?
Damn right it's me. I want you to come in here and kill this bastard who kidnapped me. Not the girl, though. I got something special planned for her.
Lace jabbed Guthrie hard in the kidney with the rifle barrel.
You don't have anything special, you weaselly little varmint.
There's a girl in there, too?
And she can shoot just as good or better than any of you. You don't believe me, just try to get in here. You know now we've got Guthrie, so back off.
Boss!
Do what they say, I reckon. For now, they're both loco enough to kill me.
You mean there's only two? Well, where's the old man? Is he dead?
The old timer was plenty glad to sell me his claim and be shut of all the trouble. He's halfway to Mexico by now.
We're leaving, but this ain't over. If you're smart, you'll let the boss go and then light a shuck out of here. You might get clear with your lives that way.
The kid didn't believe that for a second. Neville would leave riflemen hidden in the trees to watch the canyon mouth. If he and Lace so much as showed their faces, they would be gunned down instantly.
Now what do we do, kid?
Now we wait.
By late afternoon, the kid decided to stuff the gag in Guthrie's mouth again.
If I ever saw a man who could pass for a hydrophobic skunk, it's him. How does anybody get so twisted and evil?
The kid didn't answer. In the days after Rebel's death, he had come so close to giving in to his despair that he could have wound up just as warped as Guthrie. Clinging to the memories of his wife had kept him sane.
I guess I shouldn't talk. I was mixed up with Pronto Pike, after all. If anything, he's even worse than Guthrie.
Hard to believe, but I'll take your word for it. He's quiet now anyway. I'm grateful for that.
Guthrie couldn't do anything except make grunting noises through the gag, but his eyes continued to follow them around the camp, lit by the hellish glare of murderous hatred. They kept guard most of the time, one watching the gate, the other scanning the tops of the canyon walls, looking for sharpshooters Neville might send up there to try to pick them off. The kid was watching the opposite rim when he spotted movement. A moment later, his keen eyes saw the barrel of a rifle thrust around a rock. The bushwhacker leaned out a little to aim. It was enough of a target for the kid. His Winchester snapped to his shoulder. The bullet struck the rock only inches from the man's head and made him jerk back, exposing more of him. The Winchester's lever was a blur as the kid worked it and fired again. The bullet bored through the man's head. He pitched forward, dropping his rifle and landing so his arms and head and shoulders hung off the edge of the canyon rim. Blood dripped in a steady stream from his shattered skull.
Kid?
Lace was on the other side of the rock.
You all right?
Yeah. Keep an eye on the gate. They might try hitting us from two directions at once.
After a few minutes, somebody the kid couldn't see took hold of the dead man's feet and hauled him back, away from the rim. That was fine with the kid. He didn't need the grisly sight as a reminder of the danger he and Lace were in, and hoped the bushwhacker's death discouraged any other gunmen from trying the same tactic. By nightfall, nothing else had happened. Not wanting to risk a fire, the kid and Lace had a cold supper. They would build one in the morning so they could have coffee, if they were still alive.
You want the gag out? Are you going to behave yourself?
The kid obliged.
Don't I get something to eat?
You heard Nibble. He's planning on starving us out. We have to make our supplies last as long as they possibly can.
You know it's not gonna come to that. You sent Blount to Phoenix to fetch the law, didn't you?
That's right. He'll be back in another 3 days or so. And your little reign of terror will be over, Guthrie.
I don't know how you figure that. I'm an important man in these parts. The authorities wouldn't believe an old fool and a couple of drifters over me.
That's where you're wrong, Guthrie. My real name is Conrad Browning.
Seems like I heard that name before.
You should have. I own an interest in a number of banks in Arizona Territory, as well as the railroad and several mines.
Well, I'm supposed to believe that? You're nothing but a fast gun saddle tramp.
Appearances are deceiving. Not only that, I've made an offer to Mr. Blount for half interest in Dos Caballos Canyon. We haven't worked out the details yet, but he's going to take me up on it. So for all intents and purposes, this is my land too. And I'm not going to let you steal it.
Listen to me. If you take me with you as a hostage, you can ride out of here in the morning. My men won't have any choice except to let you go. I'll order them to stay here and not follow you, and when you've got a 5 or 10 mile lead, however much you want, you can let me go and ride on. You've killed some of my men and annoyed the hell out of me, but I'm willing to call it square.
I'm not. I hold a grudge.
He knew that Guthrie was lying. The rancher would never let them go unscathed. One way or another, he would have to have his revenge, unless he was locked up or dead. Leaving Max to keep an eye on the prisoner, the kid and Lace moved to stand guard on the gate. One of them would stay awake at all times to listen for anyone trying to sneak up. They used the pine trees for cover again. They planned to alternate 2-hour shifts. The kid would stay awake first, letting Lace get a little sleep. He stood with his back against the tree, the rifle cradled across his chest, and listened intently. Guthrie's men might be able to slip up to the gate on foot without being heard, but they couldn't unfasten the latch without making the brush rustle. The night was quiet, cool, and peaceful. It would have been mighty pleasant, the kid thought, if he hadn't been listening for a bunch of cold-blooded killers who wanted to wipe out him and Lace.
Kid, I'm awake. Get some shut-eye.
Thanks.
He slid down to sit at the base of the tree with his back against the trunk. Sleep claimed him within seconds of closing his eyes. He hadn't completely mastered the trick of waking up when he wanted to, but he was able to come pretty close to the allotted amount of time. When he opened his eyes again, he was confident that not much more than 2 hours had passed. If he had overslept by too much, Lace would have called to him and woken him.
All right.
Somebody's out there.
He brought the rifle to his shoulder and swung around the tree so he could aim at the gate across the canyon mouth. He listened and didn't hear anything at first. But a moment later, the sound came to his ears. He knew Lace was right. Somebody was creeping up on the gate, and they couldn't be up to anything good. A faint rasp and a sudden small flare of light sent alarm stabbing through the kid's veins like ice.
Dynamite!
Sparks sputtered at the base of the gate as the kid dashed out from behind the tree and sprinted toward the canyon mouth. He hadn't anticipated them trying to blow up the gate, but he should have, he thought bitterly, racing toward the gate to reach the bomb and pull the fuse before it exploded.
Kid!
Cover me!
He threw himself forward in a long dive that carried him to the bottom of the gate. Lace sprayed rifle slugs over his head through the brush tied onto the wooden framework. At the same time, Guthrie's men opened fire from outside the canyon, focusing on the bundle of dynamite and the fuse just on the other side of the gate. The kid shoved brush aside and thrust his arm through the opening he had created. The dynamite was just out of his reach. He threw his shoulder against the gate and stretched his arm out as far as he could. His fingers brushed the burning fuse. He pushed aside the pane as sparks bit into his hand. The fuse was too short for him to pull, so he did the only thing he could. He closed his hand around it, smothering the fire with his flesh. The sparks died out, but a second later, bullets began to smack into the ground around him. Guthrie's men were trying to detonate the explosives by firing into them. Not wanting to take the chance it might work, he strained forward again and closed his hand around the three sticks of dynamite that had been tied together. He pulled them through the gate and rolled away from the slugs that were whipping around him. It was possible a few sticks of dynamite could come in handy later on. He tossed them over to the far side of the canyon, then snatched up his Winchester, which he had dropped when he dove for the explosives. He scrambled back behind the pine tree and joined Lace in returning the fire of Guthrie's men. In the dark, all they could do was aim at muzzle flashes. It was impossible to know if their bullets found their target.
Kid, on the rim!
The kid twisted and looked up, saw the flare of another match. They were going to try dropping dynamite from up there. He brought up his rifle and fired. A man staggered forward, silhouetted against the starlight. He pitched forward off the rim, plummeting toward the canyon floor below. The kid held his breath for a few seconds, waiting to see if any dynamite was going to go off. When there was no explosion, he knew he had winged the man before he had been able to light the fuse. The shooting from outside trailed off. As Lace's gun fell silent, the kid took a chance.
Neville! You out there?
What do you want, you son of a bitch?
Call it off now or Guthrie dies! I've got a gun to his head!
All right, we're leaving, but this
ain't... Yeah, it ain't over. I've heard that before. You and the rest of Guthrie's crew have any sense, you'll ride out now and save your own hides. The sweet deal you had here, that's over.
After a minute, the sound of hoofbeats drifted through the night. Maybe Guthrie's crew of killers really were pulling out, or maybe it was another trick. The kid thumbed fresh cartridges through the Winchester's loading gate to replace the ones he'd fired. He and Lace would be ready. If it came down to it, they would go out fighting.